Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
He don't let the game come to him. Mm-hmm. He just go out there and take it.
He's going to take people. He's going to make his game.
I'm going to make this a one-on-one game.
Look, I figured after the first four attempts, it didn't go.
What? After the first four attempts, if I was a teammate, I wouldn't pass him the ball. Hey, you want this ball again, brother. You better rebound.
No one escapes the hazing, not even Kobe Bryant. Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by the 2008 Finals MVP, Mr. Paul Pierce, and the Hall of Famer, Tracy McGrady. Happy Monday, guys. Coming up, some of the all-time greats were left without championships throughout their careers because Michael Jordan stood in the way at one point or another. We will discuss who is the best player among that group. But first, let's talk about The Last Dance. Last night, we saw how Michael Jordan became the most famous man on the planet. You know, like Mike, if I could be like Mike, you know that one. We also saw, though, the price he paid for the level of fame, the claustrophobic attention from fans, the scrutiny on every little thing he did, especially, you know, if he was doing it at a casino. T-Mac, I'm not saying you had to deal with Jordan-level craziness, but you're a household name both here and around the world in places like China. And I assume when you're on the come up, you want that fame, that recognition. But then how difficult is it to still perform at such a high level the way Jordan did while dealing with all that external pressure?
Listen, nobody really prepares you for that. And, you know, the level of awareness and just the things that you in your control that you have to be aware of, like, things that you say, things that you do when you're out in public, everything gets scrutinized. And he has to be Michael Jordan at all times, the Air Jordan at all times when he's in public. I have to be T-Mac at all times when I'm in public. Like, that's the perception of us when you reach. I didn't reach Michael Jordan level, but I reached some stardom. And it becomes overwhelming, like, you know, people idolize what we do, but I think a lot of times they forget that we're humans too. Like, we want to live a normal life. We want to go to the store. We want to go to a convenience store just to get a drink or go pump gas without being bothered. I mean, it becomes overwhelming. I remember when I was playing in China, watching that documentary last night and seeing how crazy it was for Jordan when he leaving the hotels, leaving the games. It was like that for me when I played in China. It was just, every time I stepped foot out of the hotel, out the arena, there were thousands of people just waiting to see you, to touch you, to interact with you. And at some point, it just really became overwhelming. And I can understand, you know, from Jordan's level here in the States, I mean, globally, he was an icon.
Yeah, man, it had to be difficult, but I'm sure he had his number of people that he can buffer for them, that can take calls, that can tell people no. But, you know, when all you really want to do is play basketball, like you said, T-Mac, you have so many people reaching out to you, celebrities, fans, commercials, family, friends. I mean, all those things people don't think about. And on top of that, you know, you want to be the best basketball player that you can be. So, you know, you have to put in time in the gym. You know, you got to figure out when is the time to have your space and your fun. So, you know, he had to manage so many different things, and to be able to come out on top to be the greatest basketball in all of our eyes, it's truly amazing, despite all the obstacles that he had to deal with, just all the distractions. You know, I was never on the level of Michael Jordan, even in a social media era. But you have to imagine how difficult that was just to concentrate at times. And, you know, for him to just be able to go through all that, it was just like almost God said, you were built for this. I'm going to throw this all at you, and you're going to take it, and you're
going to still
be the
best. It's so interesting because there's a line at the beginning of the second hour they showed last night where Michael Jordan is like, a lot of people would like to be Michael Jordan for a day or for a week. I don't think you'd like it if you were there for a year. And it's funny, on social media last night, you saw a bunch of people chiming in, be like, oh, I'd be fine with it. Just, you know, give me the chance to meet Michael Michael Jordan for a year. And I understand that in the larger sense. But Tracy McGrady, it's so interesting. I'm thinking about when you got to Orlando, right? The pressure on you to perform under those circumstances is so high. It's not just enjoying like, oh, I'd love a lot of people to ask me for my autograph. It's that you have to manage all that and still play basketball at the level, especially then, you were expected to play. You were saving the franchise, right?
Well, yeah, when I reached stardom in Orlando, signing a max contract, having, you know, given the keys to me because Grant Hill went down due to injury, and it was just all about me. I mean, at that time, probably the biggest person in Orlando that was bigger than me was Mickey Mouse. I mean, it was tough. It was tough to go to restaurants. Like, I had to call ahead of time to schedule, like, a private room to eat at restaurants in Orlando. And walk around in the malls was just crazy. I literally couldn't leave outside my gates without having, attention around.
And then go drop 30 every night.
And go drop 30 every night.
Well, Jordan, he takes his lumps in this documentary, but he also gives them out, guys. He is so petty and lethal in this doc. I swear half the scenes are just him saying, right, but who are we kidding? This guy wasn't as good as me. And we saw it last night. Indeed, the list of Hall of Famers, elite talent guys who never got a ring because of Jordan, Patrick Ewing, Charles Barkley, John Stockton, Karl Malone, Reggie Miller. Here's Charles Barkley talking about losing to Jordan in last night's episode.
I have no problem losing to Michael. Losing to Michael, there's no shame in that. Sports are like a gunfight. And we lost to the fastest gun.
Best in the West. Paul, you heard Barkley say there is no shame in losing to Michael Jordan. But of all the guys denied a ring by MJ, who do you think is the best player?
I think of all the guys that was denied by MJ, I got to go with Karl Malone. I mean, Karl, we'll be talking about him as being probably the best power forward of all time if he gets one, maybe two rings in that era. But, you know, there's no shame. Like you said, you lost to the greatest player of all time. I mean, I just couldn't imagine playing in a Jordan era to where it's like there's no rings available until those 2 years he retired in the 90s. And it was just like all these guys that were in their prime, it was just, I know they look back today, it was like if Michael Jordan was just hurt or something else, he just didn't play in that era, you know, history would be a whole lot different, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I got to go with Karl Malone as well. I mean, you think about the number of points that this cat put up. He's a two-time MVP, and he faced MJ the most in the finals 2 years in a row. He was denied by the greatest player ever. And like Charles Barkley says, no shame in that. I mean, you got to go down the list and look at all the Hall of Famers that this cat eliminated from not winning the championship. Karl Malone, I mean, had he won one or two, you know, he probably would be the greatest power forward to ever
play. It really is interesting that when you get to that elite level, you don't want to be that rings culture and say a ring is everything. And Barkley's talked eloquently on this over the years. But Karl Malone's legacy really would be completely different if he had at least one title ring. I'm not sure Barkley's would. I think Charles has been able to carve such a path for himself post-playing. We would kind of think of him the same way if he had a ring or not. But I do think we would think of Karl a lot differently, like both of you guys said. All right, coming up, Chicago native PTI co-host Michael Wilbon is going to join me to discuss The Last Dance. Nobody better when it comes to talking Bulls basketball. So stay tuned for that. First, though, it's time for our distant replays. These are all from this date in NBA history. Good stuff here. Take a look.
Watch Curry. They'd like to free him up for the shot against Curry. He feels comfortable.
Good dribble left, and he buries the jumper. Good call, Doug. 3.8. That's what you'll be telling your defenders in Detroit next year. Let's just hope they listen. Michael Jordan at the buzzer. Got it.
Collins to stay at home on Steve Smith and Mookie Blaylock.
Shot clock at five, and Grant Hill with
vigor. And he said, where was Dikembe that time?
Well, Mutombo's out of the ballgame. That's the only reason that Grant Hill was able to come to the basket.
Arenas, played by Heinrich. Both teams over the limit. Here's Arenas. This for the win. Yes! It's over!
The Wizards have defeated the Bulls. They come right back following the Chicago comeback. They win at the buzzer on the jumper by Gilbert Arenas.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Let's get right to it. The Chicago Bulls have won their second three-peat. This is the kind of stuff that ESPN will eventually make a documentary about. They'll call it something like The Last Dance and make it a 10-part series and release it in the year 2020. It's going to be lit. You don't even know what that means yet. While I'm making predictions, jeans will get extra tight. There'll be a thing called a butt fumble. And this clip will be used to promote the documentary in a State Farm commercial. It's just a hunch.
This coming Sunday, it's episodes 7 and 8 of The Last Dance. For more on those episodes, as well as the ones we saw last night, here's someone heavily featured in the documentary. Welcome back to The Jump. I am so thrilled to be joined by, the Hall of Famer, the great Michael Wilbon. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Rachel.
So much great stuff in last night's episodes, but one of the biggest overall themes was Michael ascending to this almost mythic, godlike place in American culture, and then the cost of having reached that point. What did you learn in real time, in real life, when you were watching him go through both the rise and then the price of that rise?
Well, the first thing I think you just observe, Rachel, is that Michael Jordan, more or less, and I don't know who was in between, but he more or less replaced Muhammad Ali as the most famous man on the planet. So that was the first observation. And The second one, which is almost automatically attendant, is, everybody's watching. It is not just sports people. The world is watching, and they're going to make something of everything. And I don't know that anybody can be prepared for that. I remember some of the quote-unquote missteps, perhaps, that Muhammad Ali made or people thought he made. And Michael, obviously, was going to Atlantic City during that Knicks series.
Yep.
I don't think anybody was prepared for the fallout and the reaction to that.
Well, I do want to ask you about gambling because, Wilbon, I can remember a couple times you and I sat and watched Michael play cards together. And I am sure I only got to see 1%, Wilbon, of what you saw. So do you think he has or had a gambling problem?
I don't know about problem. I don't gamble at all, at all. So I don't know what problem is. And I never sought to make that distinction or determination. I didn't feel the need to make that judgment. He liked to gamble. Not alone. All you got to do is go to Vegas or Atlantic City. Or now, wait a minute. Since Michael Jordan's gambling problem,
right,
the entire United States of America has sought, every state has sought to enter into gambling at the highest level with all of the great casinos of our time. So who's got a gambling problem? Does all of America have one? I don't know. A legitimate question, but I just never sought to judge in that way.
The Dream Team is covered in these episodes. MJ insists here he never specifically said Isaiah Thomas can't be on the team. Why do you think Isaiah wasn't on that team?
Well, he didn't have to. Isaiah was the face of a great and polarizing team. My best guess would be, having covered the team and having been there, I'm going to say 9 of those guys just were not in favor of hanging out with Isaiah Thomas at that time. And that's what that summer was, Rach. It was a big hangout. It was like summer camp. They knew who they wanted to spend the summer with, and they knew who they didn't want to spend the summer with. And to hang that on Michael Jordan is just inaccurate. Michael didn't have to get Isaiah off the Dream Team. He wasn't on it. Was Isaiah Thomas in their class as a player? Oh my God, yes. But that group of people, I'm going to say 9 out of 12, they made it known to whomever that this wasn't somebody they wanted in their summer camp. And I know it causes Isaiah pain now. I know it does. And those guys will say, well, he brought it on himself. Right? I mean, so the notion that it was just Michael Jordan stopping, inaccurate, historically inaccurate.
Well, in last night's episode, they also covered the politics angle. And I got to be honest, it's the first time I have ever heard Michael publicly acknowledge he did indeed say the line, quote, Republicans wear sneakers too. It's been brought up so many times over the years, people criticizing MJ for not being political, saying he sold out so he could, well, sell more shoes. How do you see Jordan's lack of engagement on politics or social issues?
Well, you know, it's funny, Rachel, this discussion has so many cycles. When we talk about Michael selling out, I remember thinking at times, okay, he's not doing enough. And I remember thinking at times in my own life, he sold out to the tune of $100 million a year with just Nike, just his shoe sales. Okay, so how many black billionaires do we have in the United States of America now? As that becomes an important distinction, an important achievement, accomplishment, a light to shine, that children can see this and say, yep, this guy has done. Is that not worthy? I'm sorry. I'm going to tell anybody who tells me that's not worthy to go to hell. That's just my personal opinion. Could he have done that and also been outspoken? I guess he could have. He chose not to. And last I checked, that's his right as an American citizen as well.
This documentary also highlights the toll it took on MJ to win those three titles in a row, all the stuff we've been talking about. And of course, as we know, he ended up stepping away after the first three-peat. What do you think would have happened if he had just played basketball straight through the 90s? Would the Bulls have won 8? Would they only have won 6 of 8, but just in a different order or way? Would they have won 10? What do you think?
I have said to him, if you stay, does burnout reduce you and the Bulls, you know, in those
97, 98? If he stayed in 94, 95, right?
I get the eyebrow. I get the Bugs Bunny eyebrow. Like, are you on drugs? Are you stupid? And it's interesting. I still believe there was a burnout, which is okay. But I don't think Michael's ever used that word. And I think it's met with, like, Dikembe. Like, no, I'm going to smack that. But I really would have liked to have seen 99. It's the seventh. It's the attempt at 7 that didn't come about that angered everybody, including me.
Well, we were around when he tried to come back for the third time in D.C., we saw how that worked out maybe a few years too late. Well, Mon, thank you so much for doing this. There's no one better to talk to about this.
Thank you, Rachel.
Thanks so much for being here.
Good to see you. Stay safe.
Coming up on the anniversary of LeBron winning his first MVP award, we ask, is this postponed season his best chance at a 5th career regular season MVP? Stick around. That's next on The Jump. And here's what The Jump recommends for today. Jesse Washington of The Undefeated wrote a piece on Jordan's infamous Republicans buy sneakers too quote. Really interesting deep dive. Check it out on the app.
It could be a routine drive to pick up the kids after school or an epic road trip across the country. No matter where your travels take you, we know those miles count. We're Marathon. We have over 5,700 stations across our great nation. Our people are working hard every day to provide you with quality top-tier gasoline to improve engine performance and fuel your life. Marathon, fueling the American spirit.
Coming up later at 5 o'clock Eastern, it's SportsCenter with the PTI guys joining the show. And we cap the day with SVP at 11 Eastern. After our Monday Night Football flashback, that's the Fail Mary game from 2012. Then on Wednesday, we continue our look back at the greatest games in NBA history, this time with a pair of bookends. First, it's Game 3 of the 2006 Finals. That's where Wade and Shaq led the Heat comeback against the Mavs, followed by it's bookend, Game 2 of the 2011 Finals, where Dirk Nowitzki steals one from the Heatles. So, guys, as the NBA looks into the possibility of resuming this season in some capacity, ESPN's Baxter Holmes spoke to multiple NBA general managers who are concerned about exposing older members of their respective organizations to COVID-19. As many of you guys know, the CDC has said that adults 65 and over are at a higher risk of severe illness or death from COVID, and there are multiple members of every franchise who are over 65. But here are a few notables: Pat Riley, Greg Popovich, Mike D'Antoni. Paul, how hard would it be to keep some of the names on this list from literally risking it all for their teams?
I mean, how are you going to tell Coach Pop and Coach D'Antoni, like, you know, we're going to resume the season, but you guys are at higher risk, so, you know, it's on you guys. So, I mean, I think it has to be a conversation that has to be made to, you know, the people in that category. It's tough, but you know what? At the end of the day, you know, guys want to go back to doing the things they love. And, you know, and I'm sure all the precautions that the NBA would take and moving forward and putting everybody in the bubble and making sure the tests are available, you know, it'll make guys in that bracket feel a lot safer than normal. So, you know, it's a touchy subject, sensitive, especially for the older guys. But I think based on, you know, what the NBA wants to do in creating this bubble and bringing, you know, the players and the coaches back, it wouldn't be a problem, I don't think.
Yeah, I think just, you know, take precautionary measures and talk to subject matter experts on this, you know, for those people that are 65 and older. You know, so they're not at risk and they don't put anybody else at risk if they're going to, you know, go along with this bubble.
All right, guys, we're running out of time. But on this date in 2009, LeBron won his first Most Valuable Player award. He, of course, went on to win 4 MVPs in 5 years. But his last one did come all the way back in 2013. So, Tracy, was this season LeBron's best chance at a 5th MVP award?
Yes, it was. I mean, you're talking about him leading the Lakers his first year in the Western Conference to the 4th seed before he got injured and then never really fully recovered from that. Coming in this season, adding somebody like Anthony Davis, and they're the number one team in the Western Conference, and he's playing at a high level. I mean, basically the best player on the court. He's playing a lot more defense this year, lockdown defense, and taking the challenges. And, you know, it's a two-headed race between him and Giannis. And right now, you know, LeBron is right on the cusp of getting that 5th one.
I mean, this was his best chance, but I still think clearly this was Giannis's year. He's having a spectacular year, leading the league in so many different categories. I mean, they have the best record, so this was LeBron's definitely best chance. Based on the last few weeks when they beat Milwaukee and Giannis, they beat Kawhi Leonard. They beat the top teams in the NBA. So this was definitely his best year, but I still think
Paul,
he falls short.
Poll writers, the large group that makes up the MVP voters, most of them were still going for Giannis as recently as last month. So I think you're right that he was further away than maybe the public perception was. For me, LeBron's best chance at the 5th MVP was back in 2011. He led Derrick Rose in so many stat categories. But, of course, Derrick Rose's Bulls had the better record, and he got the MVP. All right, thanks to Tracy and Paul. See ya.